Chapter 4. Stay calm. The lion spoke without haste, pouring reassurance and strength into those two words as he felt the touch of panic settling upon the dozens of crew manning the Strategium. There was not a man or woman aboard the ship that had not faced death more than once, but being engulfed in the warp breach was a test that none of them had faced before. He activated the internal comm system with a flick of a finger. All captains and other officers maintain discipline in your sections. We are experiencing a temporary situation that will be resolved swiftly. You have your standing orders. Obey them. The Primarch felt his heart beating a little faster than normal, but it was just an expected response to an emergency. He took a moment to review the situation. The Invincible Reason was caught betwixt the warp and real space, trapped in a rift caused by the Night Lord's detonation of their warp engines. The Lion could feel the energy of the warp pulsing through and around him, suffusing the material of the ship, the air, his body. Only a few seconds had passed since the warp tide had engulfed them, and everything seemed slightly distorted, as if he was standing at an angle to normality, looking in from a slightly different place. The lights on the display consoles winked strangely, fluttering to an aberrant rhythm that represented no system on the ship. The muted voices of the crew were dislocated, sounding as though they came from a great distance. The visual screens had gone blank, unable to replicate the vortex of power that was whirling around the ship. Captain Stenius stepped up beside the Primarch, a faint afterglow left in his wake, trails of glimmering sparks falling from the edges of his armour as he moved.
"Status report," said the Lion. "Void shields, Gelo field, warp engines."
"Aye, my liege," replied Stenius,
his voice echoing for a moment inside the Lion's head. More fiery trails danced in the air as the captain raised his fist to his chest in salute.
"We have reports of fighting."
This came from Corswain, who had moved to one of the main monitoring stations, his voice sounding like a distant shout, though he was less than 10 meters away.
"Starboard gun decks, levels 8 and 9.
"Enemy," snapped the Lion. "A Night Lord's teleport attack."
"No clear report, my liege," said Corswain. "It is very confusing."
"Get down there and establish some order, little brother. Clear head, discipline, and courage."
Corswain nodded and headed towards the doors while the Lion turned his attention back to Stenius, one eyebrow raised in question.
"Warp interference prevents us raising void shields, my liege. We would suffer the fate of the Night Lords. The same is true of the Gelo field. We've not fully translated, and to activate it would risk a massive feedback loop. Warp engines are still cycling back to potential from our translation."
Though the captain's face was immobile, his shoulders sagged.
"We are trapped here for the moment, my liege."
The Lion absorbed this without comment, the reality of the situation brought home by the captain's stark words. He formed a plan of action. "We cannot break free from this storm, so we must ride it to the heart. Have the warp engines readied as soon as possible. We will make a full translation back into warp space and activate the Gelo field to stabilize normality. Have Lady Fiana report to me immediately. Understood?"
"Yes, my liege."
The main doors hissed open, and 15 Dark Angels in Terminator armor entered, combi bolters and power fists at the ready. Their immense armor was black as pitch and trimmed with silver, broken only by the sigils of the Legion on their shoulder pads and the Scarlet Skull emblems on their huge chest plates. The personal blazon of Brother Redemptor Nemuel, who was there to meet them.
"Maintain order, brothers,"
the chaplain told his bodyguard.
"Be watchful, and show no hesitation."
Stepping off the conveyor at Gun Deck 9, his retinue of 10 legionaries in close step behind him, Corswain still had no better idea what was happening or who had attacked the ship. The comm feed was alive with reports of the unidentified assailants sweeping from bastion to bastion, and he could hear bolter fire and heavier weapons echoing along the corridor from the gun platforms towards the prow. It was possible, though highly unlikely, that the Night Lords had managed some form of long-range teleport as a last-ditch act before their ship was destroyed. It would not be the most unbelievable act the Night Lords had performed recently. The gun deck was composed of a main corridor, nearly a kilometre long, with access passages every 200 metres leading to each of the gun turrets, which in turn were self-contained keeps housing the macro cannons and missile pods used for close attack against enemy ships. They were designed to withstand boarding, and Corswain could see that the defence bulkheads had been dropped on the closest platforms, isolating them from the rest of the ship. How any attacker had managed to breach several platforms at once in such a short space was beyond his reckoning. Several dozen unarmed crew members wearing plain black livery came streaming past, heading to aft, fleeing the fighting. There was a wild look in their eyes, and they paid him no heed as he called for them to stop and explain what was happening. Corswain had never seen such terror in the eyes of seasoned men before. Another burst of furious gunfire sounded ahead as the Seneschal and his bodyguard pounded down the corridor towards the fighting. Deck Captain Isarsis was supposed to be in charge, but was not responding to Corswain's calls on the comm. Probably already dead. Amidst the detonation of grenades, a handful of Dark Angels backed into the main passage, bolters blazing into the turret doorway of Gunkeep 4, 50 metres away, two flamers licking promethium fire into the opening. Corswain's auto-senses dimmed his sight for an instant as a flare of bright energy erupted from the opening. Pink and blue flames exploded into the passageway, carrying with them the burning bodies of two more Dark Angels. The Seneschal had never seen any weapon like it, and broke into a sprint, readying his pistol and power sword as he closed with the group of legionaries. The two warriors who had been caught in the attack flailed around on the floor as multicoloured flames danced across their armour, melting through their suits like a plasma blast. A demand for a report died on Corswain's lips as he came level with the turret doorway and saw what was within, all reason driven from his thoughts for a moment. The interior of the gunkeep was ablaze with multicoloured flames, and in the heart of the blinding inferno cavorted strange shapes. They were like nothing Corswain had seen before, and he had encountered many strange enemies in his years of service to the First Legion. The alien creatures seemed to be composed of the fire itself. Headless, legless bodies with faces in their chests and long gangling arms that spouted more fire from maw-like openings at their ends. Their torsos flared out to frilled edges where legs should have been, jumping to and fro with contorted twists. The creatures were setting everything ablaze with abandon, the crackling of the fires accompanied by inhuman screeching and cackling. Corswain's pistol felt heavy in his hand as he raised it, and for the first time since he had been old enough to hold a weapon, his hand trembled as he took aim. Eyes that were made of pure white fire regarded him malignly from the heart of the inferno, burning into his psyche as surely as the flames had melted through the armour of the dead Dark Angels. It seemed as if Corswain looked into a bottomless abyss of flame, the sight searing into his memory like a brand. He opened fire, but the explosive bolts detonated in the flames before they reached their targets. The creatures were at the doorway, flames licking at the floor of the main passage. Corswain adjusted his aim and sent two bolts hammering into the emergency release controls. The bulkhead slammed down just in front of the maniacal aliens, cutting off the infernal fire, and eerie silence descended. Trying to make sense of what he'd seen, Corswain noticed that the bulkhead was starting to glow at its centre. The unnatural flames of the attackers now turned to the purpose of burning through the metres-thick portal. As he watched the glow spreading, droplets of molten material started to stand out on the plasteel like the sweat on his brow. The Seneschal judged that it would only be a matter of a few short minutes before the creatures escaped their temporary prison. In the quiet that had descended, he looked at the other Dark Angels, but like them could think of nothing to say, no orders to give, numbed by the bizarreness of what they'd encountered.
"Seneschal!"
The warning came from Brother Alates, one of his personal guard. Turning to look aft, Corswain saw the air swirling with power, as it had done when the warp rift had first engulfed the ship. Shapes were forming in the miasma, monstrous red hounds with scaled flesh and fangs of iron, their tails tipped with venom-dripping barbs, heads surrounded by an armoured frill. The infernal hounds were almost fully formed now, their growls and snarls resounding along the passageway. In moments, they would be upon them. The apparitions reminded him of old tales from Caliban, and a word sprang to mind, loaded with loathing and fear. Nephila.
Corswain found himself speaking, issuing a command out of instinct that he thought he would never utter as a Dark Angel.
Fall back! Retreat! And seal the gun deck!
He stepped back towards the closest conveyor, firing his pistol at the monstrous dogs, though he knew his bolts would have little effect. The other Dark Angels were with him, filling the corridor with a flicker of bolts. The swish of the conveyor doors opening behind him flooded the Seneschal with relief in a way he had never thought possible. He gratefully backed into the chamber as the enormous, incorporeal hounds bounded down the corridor towards him. To stay would be to die. The walls of the Navigator's Lounge shimmered with pre-echoes of what was to come. Fianna could see before images of monstrous creatures pawing at the substance of the ship, her third eye granting her a vision of what was to be. Coydon stood at the door, a las pistol dangling pointlessly in his left hand, his right on the frame of the open portal, as he peered into the antechamber, looking not so much with his eyes as his other sense.
"It's clear,"
said Coydon, turning to look at Fianna past the high collar of his long vermilion coat.
"Kiafan, follow Coydon. Aeneas, stay with me."
Fianna ushered her siblings towards the door with a last look back at the spiral way that led up to the navigation pilaster. Something large and slug-like was heaving its bulk through the metal of the escalator steps, becoming more solid as it pushed through from the warp. Fianna slid up the metal band blocking her third eye and opened the leathery eyelid covering the orb. She concentrated on the solidifying apparition, channeling the energy stream that allowed her to pierce the veils of the warp. Here, in real space, that stream erupted as a scourging beam of black light that struck the beast between the waving fronds surrounding its fanged maw. The thing withered under Fianna's psychic glare, its insubstantial form scattered into tattered mist as the energy that bound it to the material plane was thrust back into warp space. A cry from Kiafan alerted her to more creatures in the passageway outside, and she joined the others at a run. Winged, hook-clawed spectres hung from the vents in the ceiling, having seized the hood of Kiafan's robe to drag him into the air. With her normal eyes, Fianna could see a smudge of movement above Kiafan as the desperate navigators tried to turn his third eye on the two creatures who had seized him from behind. With her other sense, she saw gargoyle-like creatures with long bony limbs and stone-like flesh. Coydon and Aeneas combined their third eyes to blast the hideous creatures back into their immaterial realm, causing Kiafan to fall heavily to the floor. He grasped his ankle and looked up at Fianna with tear-filled eyes.
"I think it's broken," he moaned. "They're coming through the walls," said Aeneas.
Humanoid and other shapes were coalescing through the bare plasteel bulkheads around the navigators, too many to destroy.
"Pick up your brother,"
Fianna told Coydon. She grabbed Aeneas by the shoulder and dragged her brother past the pair. She gave him a shove towards the door leading through the next bulkhead. Something pot-bellied and cyclopean was forming out of a dark pool of rust and slime spreading across the floor of the passage beyond.
"Clear a path,"
Fianna said.
"Where to?"
Aeneas asked, his youthful face almost white with fear.
"The Strategium," replied Fianna. "We must reach the protection of the lion."
Having recovered some of his equilibrium, Corswain did all that he could to organize a defense of the gun decks, but the mysterious invaders were all but impossible to confront. From the scattered outbreaks across the Invincible Reason, it was clear that the attack was not confined to the gun batteries or even the starboard decks. Pockets of foes were appearing across the vessel, with a large number seemingly intent on taking over the warp core chamber. With foes materializing behind defensive lines, making a mockery of any physical barrier that could be erected, Corswain had mobilized the ship's company into 100-strong patrols. Not far from the Strategium, he and his bodyguard came across Lady Fianna and her family. They were being escorted by Sergeant Amael and his squad, and, though the navigators looked distraught and haggard, none of them seemed to be seriously injured. The Seneschal relieved Amael of his obligation and sent him to the engine decks where the fighting was becoming protracted. When the group reached the Strategium, they were confronted by an unexpected sight. There were no signs of fighting here. The technicians went about their duties with crisp calmness, diligently ignoring the scene that was playing out in their midst.
The lion stood at the centre of the main chamber, and before him knelt a dark angel, a white tabard over his black armour, head bowed in obeisance. Surrounded by his personal guard, Brother Redemptor Nemuel stood over the kneeling legionary, his pistol and Crozius in his hands.
"Wait here,"
Corswain quietly told the navigators, motioning for them to stand to one side. The lion heard the whispered words and looked across at Corswain.
"Your timing is unintentionally impeccable, little brother," said the Primarch. "I am faced with a dilemma."
"My liege, I do not know what is happening here, but I am sure it can wait a while. We need your guidance. The ship is under sustained attack from creatures that are almost impervious to our weapons."
"The punishment of oath-breakers brooks no delay," said Nemuel.
As he approached, Corswain recognised the kneeling legionary. His helm was under his arm, his face half hidden behind long waves of black hair. It was Brother Asmodeus, formerly of the Librarium.
"Oath-breaker?" said Corswain. "I do not understand."
"My little brother has transgressed," said the lion, though there seemed no anger in his voice. "Upon being attacked, he broke the Edict of Nicaea and unleashed the powers of his mind."
"He performed sorcery," snarled Nemuel. "The same vileness perpetrated by the Night Lords that now threatens our ship."
"That is to be decided, Brother Redemptor," said the lion. "I have not yet delivered my verdict."
"The Edict of Nicaea was absolute, my liege," said Nemuel. "Warriors of the Librarium were to curtail their powers. Asmodeus has breached the oath he swore."
"Did it work?" said Corswain.
"What?"
said Nemuel, turning his skull-faced helm in the direction of the seneschal.
"Asmodeus, did your powers destroy the enemy?"
The former librarian said nothing, but looked up at the Primarch and nodded.
"Interesting," said the Primarch, his green eyes fixing on Corswain as if to see into his thoughts.
"I have seen firsthand what these things can do. They are," said the seneschal,
hesitating to use the word. He took a breath and continued,
"We face Nephila, my liege, or something akin to them. They are not wholly physical, and our weapons do little damage to their unnatural flesh."
"They are creatures of the warp, Lorded Primarch."
The group of dark angels turned as Lady Fiana approached.
"They are made of warp stuff, and the breach has allowed them to manifest in our world. They cannot be destroyed, only sent back. The gaze of our third eyes can harm them."
"Is this true?"
asked the lion, stooping to lay a hand on the shoulder of Asmodeus.
"Were your powers capable of harming our attackers?"
"From the warp they come, and with the power of the warp they can be banished again," said the librarian.
He stood as the lion changed his grip and guided the legionary to his feet. He met the Primarch's gaze for a moment and then looked away again.
"Brother Redemptor Nemuel is right, my liege. I have broken the oath I swore."
"A grave crime, and one that I will be sure to prosecute properly when the current situation has been resolved," said the lion.
He looked at Nemuel.
"There are two others of the Librarium aboard, Hasphael and Alberine. Bring them here."
"This is a mistake, my liege," said Nemuel, shaking his head. "The abominations that attack us, these Nephila, are a conjuration of sorceries. I swore an oath also to uphold the Edict of Nicaea. To unleash further sorcery will endanger us even more. Think again, my liege."
"I have issued an order, Brother Redemptor,"
said the lion, drawing himself up to his full height.
"One that I cannot follow," said Nemuel,
his tone hard, though Corswain could see the chaplain's hands were trembling with the effort of defying his Primarch.
"My authority is absolute," the lion said, clenching his fists, his lips drawn back to reveal gleaming teeth.
"The Edict of Nicaea was issued by the Emperor, my liege," said Nemuel. "There is no higher authority."
"Enough!"
The lion's roar was so loud it caused Corswain's auto-senses to dampen his hearing, as they would if he was caught in a potentially deafening detonation. The seneschal was not entirely sure what happened next. The lion moved, and a split second later, a cracked skull-faced helm was spinning through the dull glowing lights of the strategium, cutting a bloody arc through the air. Nemuel's headless corpse clattered to the floor as the lion held up his hand, pieces of ceramite embedded in the fingertips of his gore-spattered gauntlet. Corswain looked at the face of his Primarch, horrified by what had happened. For a moment he saw a vision of satisfaction, the lion's eyes gleaming as he stared at his handiwork. It passed in a second. The lion seemed to realize what he had done, and his face twisted with pain as he knelt beside the remains of the Brother Redemptor.
"My liege?"
Corswain was not sure what to say, but as seneschal he knew he had to act.
"We will mourn him later," said the lion.
The Primarch stood up, his gaze still on Nemuel's body. He broke his stare and looked at Lady Fiana, who flinched as if struck. There were three droplets of blood across the pale flesh of her right cheek.
"Tell the librarians they are relieved of their Nikean oaths. Lady Fiana, you and your family will each lead a company of my warriors. Kor, assemble 8 counter-attack forces."
8, my liege? 3 for the librarians, and 1 each for the navigators, I understand. Am I to lead the other?
"I am," said the lion. "No creature, Nephila, or any other, attacks my ship without retribution."